Here we go.
Bow, bow now.
Oh, we're singing already?
That's the song. That's the song that starts the show.
The last time, is it? Really?
You never.
The last time you were on this show, you got really drunk right away. So how drunk are you now? Is that just bourbon?
This is just water.
Okay. Well, we're going to have fun regardless.
I'm not used to having a lot of coffee, and I did drink a full mug, and I have a little bit of an empty stomach, so.
I've had so much coffee today. We'll find out what happens. Christian Britschke, if any of you are concerned out there, is dead, gone. We have no idea what's happening.
No, he's joined the cartels.
He joined the cartels.
He's in Mexico. He's joined the cartels.
Excellent. They call him El Chupacabra.
I think he's breaking a lot of senorita hearts down there.
Oh, the Latinas. Lucky them. He'll be back next week, so never fear. But in the meantime, Jason, Russell, thanks for being with us.
We're so back.
We are so back, except the Democratic Socialists have taken over New York City.
Yeah,
and
they are so back.
They are, these are some pretty radical people. I sound like a Fox News host.
No,
the
but...
radical left takeover, and they're, you know, they, no, these... they would say that about... You know, anyone?
Joe Biden or whatever.
Sure,
right?
Sure.
And
it was
not great. But you know, this is like, no, these are the people who don't think AOC has gone far enough and like said Joe.
They literally don't
Joe
think
Joe Biden
gone.
Is a war criminal.
And I think they said like this main one who's getting the most mm-hmm, attention because mm-hmm. her quotes are hilarious. Let's see if I can say her name. Darielisa Avila Chevalier.
Yes.
That's her name.
Are we going to do the quote?
Go ahead. What did she say?
She said interracial relationships are, quote, fetishizing ugly colonizer women.
What? That's pretty crazy. I'm in an interracial relationship, so I why do you want me dead, Darielisa?
Yeah, what happened to love is love.
I know. Well,
happy pride.
Exactly. She wants to, so she's a former Columbia radical. I think this is interesting. She's like mm-hmm. the first actual college student radical of the new era mm-hmm. of the like woke era of college student radicalism.
As opposed, oh, you mean like as opposed to like the 60s?
Right, okay. Right. Who mm-hmm. is, to the best of my knowledge, who's making it now to Congress
yeah.
and who is bringing the concerns of 2010s college radicals mm-hmm. to Congress. So, you know, she was at Columbia, was co-organizer of activism there that includes like, what is the exact quote? Not just... You know, Western civilization bad, but Western civilization must be totally eradicated. We are for the total eradication of Western civilization in the same breath that she says that this document says we must oppose all genocide. How do you eradicate Western civilization without engaging in genocide is what I would like to know.
Yeah. It's quite a take.
These people are nuts. So these are all Zohran Mamdani-backed people.
Right.
And the strength of his popularity or whatever helped. And they beat some people who are very, very progressive. I guess Dan Goldman is perceived as moderate because he's pro-Israel, which is, you know, another issue here. But uh-huh. a lot of these people are pretty progressive. But they're
yes.
not socialists. And
no,
now they will be socialists.
I have a new theory because I realize, like, everyone in politics who's under 30 and like 35 to 40 is an edge case too, but like everyone who's in like Congress or national politics under the age of 35, absolutely nuts. Like on
yeah,
both sides
nuts.
Of the aisle.
Nuts.
Like remember like Madison Cawthorn, very
yeah.
young.
Yeah.
Laura Loomer's under 35.
Yeah.
She's
why
not
do
in
you
Congress.
Hate disabled people?
Right. Yeah. That's me.
Yeah.
Anna Paulina Luna, she's under 35.
Yeah.
And
okay,
of
why
course...
do you hate attractive people?
And then of course it's the people on the left too. So everyone and like
uh-huh.
if you're under 35 and you're getting a national politics, you're crazy. There's no moderates.
Yes.
Like everyone else who's under 35 and 40 is just like has normal jobs and is trying to lead normal lives. But like these are the people who are trying to make.
But also I don't
want
to be governed
crazy.
By old people. So Congress should be full of people who are just exactly my own age.
Yes.
And mirror my own precise concerns
and
about
the same
the world.
Glasses as well.
Yeah. Same uh-huh. glasses. Same same style. It's bad. This is so primary system, I think, is bad. This is where I'm landing. If people have been listening to me
okay.
lately, primary voting empowers crazy people on both the right and the left.
Okay.
Your Ken Paxton's on one hand.
Yeah.
Your Marxist insanity on the other.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not a good system. I mean, these people are all going to win because New York is Democratic. So the primary
yeah.
is all that matters.
Right.
So we're stuck with them. It's what we're dealing with.
Yeah. What is your better idea? Is it just like ranked choice, have 30 people on the ballot in November? Or
smoke-filled rooms.
Smoke-filled rooms.
Remember when the party used to pick?
Yeah.
The party should pick. And because the party picks for general election competitiveness. The primary voters pick for how mad they will make the other side.
So you want to go with the UK system because that's working out real well right now. Total stability, no issues over there.
I think there's more, you feel more choices. I mean, they literally have more choices, right? Because there's more than just two parties.
That's true.
Right now,
yes, that's the big thing,
Nigel
right?
Farage is capitalizing on dissatisfaction with both Labour and the Tories. I mean, I don't, not an expert in British politics at all, but... oh my God, I just got a text from my husband that I have a speeding ticket that came through in the mail. God damn it, I hate this authoritarian hellscape we're living in. What next?
Yeah.
What
no,
next?
There are certain, sometimes I like turn on a certain street in DC and I'm like, we live in a police state. And I'm like, oh.
The speeding cameras in DC are pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
There are a lot of places
they do
where
try to warn you though. There's usually signs that say like photo enforced ahead.
Yeah, but the acceptable speed limit switches rapidly.
Yes.
It goes down suddenly. You'll be on something that's quasi-highway-like and thinking,
oh, there's four lanes here.
Fine.
I can go 60.
And then all of a sudden you're supposed that's to 40. Be at 35 and it's bad. Neither here nor there. Okay, the socialists.
The socialists are also bad.
Not
they
good.
They probably love this.
They're so happy right now. Mm-hmm. And they're going to overreach dramatically. They're going to interpret this result as a sign that democratic socialism is an electoral winner when this is just New York.
It's just New York.
So we'll see.
And this was the same case with Mamdani too, where it was the wealthier areas of the city that voted for the more socialist candidate.
Isn't that interesting?
And the working class areas that were like, no, that seems kind of crazy. Let's not do that.
Same thing here in D.C. Janice Lewis-George is by far the more left-leaning socialist candidate for within the Democratic primaries for mayor. She won.
Yes.
She beat McDuffie, who is the more moderate one. And McDuffie's base of support was older black people, and her base of support, they're both black. Mm. Her base of support was younger, whiter, affluent people. This is the same.
Well, but the richer ward of the city was the one that went for McDuffie.
But and
the
also
Northern
the
Northwest.
Older blacker people.
I imagine that
looking
too.
Demographic.
Yes. But I think some of this, so I did ask Claude for some analysis of this because I noticed this difference.
Way to phone it in. Cool.
Oh, I didn't know. I even asked Catherine. She didn't know either. Yeah.
I mean, whatever you say, boss. You're
whatever,
so smart.
Yes, exactly.
Whatever you say.
Basically, its analysis was that in New York, the affluent people are activist class, right? Like, they're going to be the socialists and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
In D.C., the wealthier people are going to be the institutional establishment class.
That's a good point.
Which I thought was smart analysis from Claude. I was glad I asked.
Why this matters to me is because you're seeing a lot. So you're seeing conservatives grappling with this on social media. And I'm seeing a lot of this is what we get. Stephen Miller says things like this. This is what comes of importing third worldism. If you bring in the third world, they adopt and embraced socialist policies.
Mm-hmm.
And that is a appealing take that is not completely correct. Because a lot of the people supporting hardcore socialist policies, unfortunately, are your heritage Americans whose ancestors came over on the Mayflower, who've had hundreds of years to accumulate generational wealth. They're very white, or they're black and they were dragged here and they're the descendants of slaves. They didn't immigrate here either voluntarily.
Right.
The idea that it's just people we're suddenly bringing in and we would be bereft of socialism except for not true, not borne out by the demographic questions, just not the case. Of course, some immigrants who come in are supporting bad economic ideas, but so are a lot of people who are born here.
Like Stephen Miller.
It's not being imported. It's coming from inside the house. It's here, unfortunately.
Yeah, and I think what disappoints me the most is that like New York City is built on capitalism and immigration, but on capitalism. And I don't just mean Wall Street. I mean like millions of immigrants coming here and then getting jobs in New York City, even if it's just, you know, working at a bodega, being a janitor, whatever it might be, and then growing up to be a middle class, whatever. And, you know, that's what built New York City into what it is, not the kind of socialist ideals that the DSA are pushing.
It's full. On Freed Up, we love to cite Bane from The Dark Knight Rises, and they are having their we give Gotham back to you, the people.
Yeah.
A moment here in terms of beheading the wealthy, putting their heads on spikes, seizing their money. Ro Khanna has been talking
and
about
the interracial
that.
Marriage people. Don't forget that too.
And the they don't like that. Ro Khanna has been talking this week about trying to seize Elon Musk's assets. He's the first trillionaire. And investigating him for trying to do Doge cuts and all that. This is what the left is offering right now, and that's what they think the Democratic Party should run on. And maybe it will. And maybe it'll be successful. Who knows?
Yeah, I don't know. On the one hand, right, this is three people in New York City.
Yeah.
Right? Like, this is not what's winning in Iowa.
Maybe.
But, I mean, again, this is totally like you said.
AOC is going to run for president on this. I mean, she's a moderate among these people.
That's the crazy thing, right? Is that now I'm like, oh, okay, yeah. And then I'm like, why? Yeah. Why would I think that? That's not good.
It is, if you pay very close attention to left-on-left squabbles, as I tend to do based on the other hosting gigs I have, in left-on-left circles, there is a lot of dislike for AOC. They perceive her as too soft on the Palestine-Israel issue, not uplifting of lefty people. This is how hardcore leftists feel about
it. No, and this is kind of like the hardcore libertarians and anyone in Congress whoever seems a little bit libertarian.
Right. Dave Smith thinking I'm the biggest sellout or something of all time. I don't know that he really thinks that way, but that kind of thing. Exactly.
I do.
Yeah, you think that. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think that about you.
That's fair.
I mean, no, I don't. Boss, you're great.
Thank you.
So great. So it'll be interesting, though, because now I do think AOC will be challenged for the progressive left lane when she runs for president by Ro Khanna.
Okay.
And I think he's better liked among these people than she is, to be perfectly honest. I think you're like Hassan Piker type people get along well with Ro Khanna and like him better than AOC.
Yeah. So, it'll be weird in the primary because it's going to be like, I assume in 2020 when it was like,
Bernie
support single payer healthcare except for two people.
Right. It's going to be the Bernie and Elizabeth Warren in the same race development with AOC as the Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah.
And Ro Khanna as the Bernie Sanders is what I'm predicting.
And the moderates are?
The moderates are Gavin. There are no moderates. I mean, Josh Shapiro.
That's true.
Is an actual moderate. Maybe, and then Gavin Newsom. And I predict Gavin Newsom will be the nominee. But it's pretty early to be predicting anything. And what do I say? Robbie, stop making predictions. I'm not going to bet anything
on
Kalshi or Polymarket or any of those places where they already know who's going to win. So you're...
they're the ones who design it, right?
They pick it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
People keep betting on things where there is some person who actually knows the answer and bets and wins. And then you're like, oh, how dare, that's so unfair. Well, no one made you make that bet.
Yeah.
Stop betting on things.
Right, yeah. I mean, they're the one who's just actually giving us more information because they know, right? Like, and it doesn't always work out. We see those examples then and it's like, actually, we didn't nuke Iran tonight. Oops.
Yes. Well, someone, and they should prohibit the people with the power to decide to nuke Iran from participating in the betting. That's a little bit different. I mean, the government should prohibit its own employees from taking advantage of insider knowledge, I would say. That's fair, right? It's fine. As like a workplace thing, right?
That's true, yeah.
But not
it's a kind of integrity thing, right, yeah.
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 Yeah. Well, that's fair. I don't want some nutcase deciding to nuke Iran because he has a lot riding on it, but...
Yeah.
But otherwise, I don't care. Okay, let's move on to something else. You're in sports gear, so there's something sportsy going along.
Sports.
The World Cup. Is that the kicking one?
It's kickball.
It's kickball?
Yes. Cool.
I like kickball.
It was a great recess sport back in the day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I always liked when we got to play that one in gym class rather than basketball. Basketball was my least favorite thing to have to play in high school. I don't mind the running. I'm just uncoordinated for that specific sport.
Okay.
I can play soccer. I can play football. Not well, but I can play them. It's
right,
fine.
You can kick a ball at
I
a
can
net.
Kick a ball. I can catch. I was on the track team. Running is not a problem. I'm too white or something. The exact skills you need to I cannot shoot a basket.
Yeah.
To save my life. If it was like the gun to the heads of people I love, they would all be massacred.
Get this
I can't
layup.
Do it. I can't move and dribble. I can't get it in the net. I'm so bad at that. Any other thing, I will stumble. I can't. I'm not like embarrassing myself.
Uh-huh.
Basketball is truly embarrassing for me.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what sports fair. Do you like to play?
I'm a golfer now. You know that.
Oh, well, yeah, I like golf.
We've done that before. That was a good time. We should do that again.
We should do that again.
I do that a lot now. What else?
But you like soccer.
But I like soccer.
That's what's going on. That's
what's going on. We should talk about that.
Is America doing well?
We are doing well. So we've won the first two games.
USA.
USA.
USA. USA.
So now we're in this unique position where our third group stage game doesn't even matter. Like, we could lose 11-0, which would be insane. And it would still be fine. We would still be in the same spot in the bracket, which comes up after this. So
how many are we in, like, the semifinal playoff, whatever?
We're in the end of the group stage. Mm-hmm. So we're about to knock out 8 teams or something like that.
Go America.
16? I don't know. We're going to knock out some teams. And
this isn't even our sport, and we're beating everybody at it.
We beat Australia and Paraguay, so don't go too crazy.
Paraguay seems like they would be good at this thing. Doesn't South America love soccer?
Yeah, I thought they would be better, but they did not do well, which was nice. Usually we don't do that well, so it's good. I don't have a great theory as to why that is, because especially like for the past 3-4 years, as we were preparing with the same coach and the same team, like we were not doing all that well. But then when it actually counted, we were like, okay, we're good now. So it's been fun to watch.
It's been fun to watch all the Europeans coming here to spectate, discovering things that they admire about American culture, Buc-ee's, et cetera.
I'm a big fan of
online.
Freddy, the German guy.
Yes.
Especially because he's like, he's hiding his face, so he's very much like not.
This is Cristiano Ronaldo's face over
his face.
Yeah,
he's just got that plastered over his. He was at your alma mater, the University of Michigan.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
Yeah. So that was fun.
Yeah, he said the frat houses look like stereotypical American frat houses, which they absolutely do. I lived my first year at the University of Michigan. I lived in South Quad, a dormitory, which was very near where a bunch of frat houses are, like the one that has like a volleyball net on its like beach volleyball, like a sandbox and a volleyball net on its front yard.
Uh-huh.
And it was just all, you know, walking past the red cups strewn everywhere after
that's
a game night. Yeah, it's America.
Yeah. Now it's probably a litter box for those furries, right? So
the furries that are being educated in America's schools
with
your tax dollars.
With your tax dollars.
Next up on Fox. We love our friends at Fox.
We do.
Well, that's good that he's been visiting that. There was a very scoldy Atlantic article about how this European tourist visiting America phenomenon is made up and is fake.
I was
looking through their evidence of that, and it was very slim.
Okay.
And like, I was that Freddy guy, they talk about him, and you're expecting them to unmask him as like actually an American or something, which they absolutely do not do.
Yeah.
So then you just come away thinking like, why does this magazine hate America? Why does it want the Europeans liking us to be fake if it's not fake?
And Freddie, who I've been following him more closely in the last few days, he's very much like, thanks for the offer, but like, I'm doing this today. Like, like he's not like digging in deep with like, oh, I want brands to do everything for me now that I'm like enjoying my fame. Like, he's still trying to go under the radar. Like, he's not trying to milk it up a whole lot, which I appreciate.
So I appreciate that
he was
too.
Very excited to like see some Amish people. And like,
that would be exciting.
Which was like, but he was wholesome about it, right? He was like, I'm not going to like photograph people. And it's not like an Amish brand is going to come. He's not getting anything out of that, right? Like,
yeah.
He just thinks it's cool, which is nice.
That's good.
Yeah.
I'm for it. While the Europeans are coming here.
You went there.
I was actually in Europe last week.
Let's talk about it.
Would you like to hear about my trip?
I want
to
hear all about Ukraine.
I was in Ukraine, of all places. Mm-hmm. Isn't that strange? There's a war going on there. Maybe you've heard about this.
No, Putin's... That's fake. That's made up.
It's not made up.
It's not made up.
If anyone thinks it's fake, it's very real. So first of all, incredibly difficult to get into the country because there's no flights into Ukraine because no airline wants to fly into Ukraine because of the bombs going on.
Yeah, that would look bad.
So you have to fly into Poland and then you take a train in. Mm-hmm. It's a very long train. On the way back, It was actually like an 11-hour overnight train. It's like this very old Soviet looking train with all these like Rube Goldberg esque devices to it's triple bunk beds.
Oh, like a
in this very
airplane bathroom, but for people to sleep
in this very, very tiny compartment where I'm like, how are three dudes supposed to sleep in here? And, you know, I know I have a lot of experience, obviously, with getting a number of dudes to sleep in tight quarters, but even that was challenging. Moving on to discuss the actual war.
Yeah, that's the more important thing.
I was in Kyiv, mm-hmm. and then for the first part of the trip, and then went further. So Kyiv is like east or west side of the country, so safer from imminent invasion.
So you thought.
Well, it is safer from imminent invasion, right. But they're being Russia is striking Kyiv and other parts of Ukraine with missiles and drones.
Yeah,
some of which get shot down, some of which do not. How it is a siren goes off. You have an app on your phone, and there's a siren to let you know that bombs are incoming, and that's based on I think satellite data that basically they're just monitoring. Russian planes are taking off.
Okay, yeah.
Russian military planes. We don't know exactly where they're going, right. But be on alert.
And then so at first, the whole country is under alert, basically.
And then they kind of narrow, have a good guess about where it's headed for, and you know. And then if you're in Kyiv, which again is further toward the west, so you have, you know, 10, 15 minutes to go down, to go to a bomb shelter basement, effectively. Get underground. And then you wait it out.
Do the bomb shelters still have like the old World War II style? Like
it's just the basement.
It's just the basement. There's not a cool label for it.
No, it's just the basement.
You just hit B on the elevator.
I mean, these things are, maybe they were kind of designed for this back in the day because it felt like more concrete-y, defense-y than
which is funny because there was probably the Soviet Union designing them to withstand American bombs.
Very much so, yes.
Yeah. They goofed up.
So the thing is, a lot of the Ukrainians have to deal with this every single day. So a lot of people, it's so disruptive to try to, you know, have a siren wake you up, not get sleep. So they're just not doing it.
Is it only at night?
No, it's not only at night. The bombings tend to be at night, but then they try to throw people off and do it during the day. Okay. So there's a lot of people who've just stopped. You know, if it seems very serious or very imminent or very, you know, depends. It's like a game time decision about whether to massively disrupt yourself and go. The underground metro station is another place a lot of people can go. So some people just don't go. And if, you know, you don't go and the bomb hits your apartment building, you die. So in these strikes, the first night I was there, an apartment building got hit and four people got killed. And they hit this monastery, the Lavra, which is this historic Ukrainian monastery that was actually blown up by the Russians when the Nazis were advancing on it, something like that. These are people who've been invaded by the Nazis, invaded by the Russians, et cetera. So they don't have love for the Nazis, but they really hate the Russians.
Yeah.
Because the Russians are the ones attacking their country right now.
Yes.
It was pretty crazy.
Did you see Chernobyl, that show a few years ago?
Yeah, it was a great show.
There was a great scene in there where the old lady's like milking her cow and like the Soviets have finally been like, we got to evacuate. And this lady's like, I was told to evacuate this time and then this time and this time and over the decades and I never did it. And then the soldiers just shoot her cow and I think that's when the scene ends.
It was a great show.
It's a great show.
What I realized, and look, I've been someone who has been, I think, critical of some of the Ukrainian perspective. Obviously, they've been invaded. Uh-huh. They are the victims in this. But what are reasonable expectations for the outcome of this conflict with Russia, which is a much bigger country, much larger manpower? I mean, you know, Russia has been attacked by the Nazis, by Napoleon, was during World War I, was able to, you know, millions of people die. The country doesn't fall because it just has that many people to waste, and they don't care.
Right.
Well, they're willing to waste them. So what can Ukraine realistically accomplish? And what level of support should we give them? So those are all things I had in the back of my head.
And it's like even a stalemate, right? Putin's not going to just say, all right, we give up, because that looks terrible for him as being like, what did we really accomplish?
He doesn't want to give up. But also he ideologically, and I think this is important to understand, he ideologically does not see Ukraine as its own country. He thinks this is Russia.
Right.
And
The whole thing.
And Ukrainian identity is this kind of inconvenient thing he doesn't really believe in.
Yeah.
So, like, in the territories they've occupied, they forbid the speaking of Ukrainian.
Okay.
They take the kids back to Moscow to learn about Russia and et cetera. They're trying to erase Ukrainian whatever. And you can say, oh, so all the Ukrainian people want to fight on.
Yeah.
Because they think if Russia wins this war, they're going to be ethnically cleansed.
Right.
And they don't want that to happen.
Right.
So there's no...
Physically or metaphorically.
There's no faction of the country that's like, that has the perspective that some of us out of America have had, that like, you're losing all these people, you can't win this, you should just give up, make some kind of deal. They don't feel that way because they think if they give up, they'll all be killed.
Okay.
It's not going to happen. They're not giving up.
You said something interesting when you got back about how previously Ukraine was kind of all separatist, not separatist, but like separate factions. Nobody really saw themselves as Ukrainian, but now they do.
They're going through the 1776 process. Okay. It's really interesting. You know, this is America's 250th anniversary. And at the time that we revolted from the British crown, you know, Virginians saw themselves as Virginians.
Right.
Pennsylvanians saw themselves as Pennsylvanians. There were Catholics in Maryland. There were Puritans. You know, it was a bunch of different groups that all came together over their dislike of taxation without representation, but didn't really see themselves as one people. But over the course of this process of fighting off England, became a nation.
Yeah.
And then that was not a perfect process. It still took, you know, further in time to really the Civil War, really to end the idea that this is just states and rather it's a nation. But this process is going on in Ukraine now, where these people, I think, frankly, at the time the conflict with Russia began, it was less of a country than it is now. Now it's
a country.
They're not having debates about what they're like. No, we have to resist. They're going to kill us all.
Yeah,
and they're going through the kind of solidifying that America experienced, and I find that very, very interesting.
Yeah, and I mean, like, we still have some kind of interstate conflicts, right? But it's usually about like sports or how bad Maryland drivers are.
right.
But like, yeah, we're not like, they're invading Ohio.
Right. No.
Ohio, we can let them have that.
That's America. We wouldn't let them do that.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. You and I, we're Michigan people, so.
Yeah.
But the rest of the Buckeyes.
The rest of America would be like, no, we got to keep Ohio.
They invade Ohio State, that's fine.
Yeah.
But, and then I got a lot of updates on the progress of the war itself, and I have a much better understanding of how modern warfare is working.
With the drones.
The drones are so interesting. So Russia has this massive person advantage.
Uh-huh.
They're not doing conscription even. Russia offers money to sign up, and your family gets the money if you die.
Right,
and
they're poor.
You're probably going to die, but you're right. You're desperately poor. You have low economic prospects.
Mm-hmm.
So you sign up the same way that adventurous young men have taken on exorbitant risk throughout all of human history for potential financial gain. This is the fact that your family gets it. I mean, this is how radical Islam convinces people to become suicide bombers. Like, well, your family's going to benefit and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
So they sign up to do it. They get shipped off. They get killed.
They get blown up.
But there's so many of them. But Right now, the drones have really negated the people advantage that Russia has, because they can't supply the people. So Russia could send a whole bunch of troops to like move further into Ukraine, and there's nothing the Ukrainians could do to stop them.
Yeah.
But to hold the territory they take, you need to establish a supply line. You need vans and tanks to bring food and water and ammunition. Like, this is not, troops just don't like forage and live on the land, right? They're not going to hunt for food. They have to be supplied. And to do that, you need this unbreakable convoy of tanks, cars.
Yeah.
But with drones, you can, at a great distance, just go fly the drone over the tank or over the car, drop a bomb on it, and blow it up.
Yep.
And the tank costs a ton of money.
Right.
And the drone is very cheap.
Oh, yeah.
Very, very cheap.
Yeah.
So it's not viable for Russia to try to do this. So there's a, and Russia could do this to Ukraine too.
Yeah.
There's a kill zone. That's what they call it.
Mm.
There's a stretch of territory, not exactly 30 kilometers, something like that.
That's a really cool word for it.
The kill zone, I know.
Yeah.
Where if you send a vehicle through there,
yeah,
they're going to blow it up.
Right.
And the people in it are going to get blown up when they try to escape.
And this is a great argument against invading Iran, too. Because correct. They have all the same drones.
Correct.
And it's the same kind of
correct.
Aspect, I think.
And we're right. I yeah. think this has actually tremendous relevance for the U.S. military. What are we building? We're building battleships and
yeah.
More armored whatever. If we wanted to hold off an invasion or were ourselves aggressively attacking Russia or China or something,
right.
this is what it would come down to,
right.
at least right now. Now, the Russians could come up with some technological innovation that takes these drones offline.
Mm-hmm.
Who knows? This is just the situation right now.
Yeah.
Like, and this drone advantage is like only a couple months old.
Yeah.
When they've really figured out that, oh my God, we can massively
yeah.
defend ourselves very easily with this.
Now, our colleague Matthew Petty has a great piece about this that everyone should read.
Does he?
Yes.
People should read it.
People should read it. Did you read, I hope this is true, I think this was true, about the Ukrainians infiltrating the Russian dating apps? So there was...
no, I didn't hear anything about that.
I know, I read the story that... you know, this Russian colonel is on the front lines. He's on this dating app. You know, he's flirting with someone he thinks is a girl, a Russian mm-hmm. girl on the app, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. And she says...
And then Chris Hansen shows up and says, you're on to catch a predator.
Worse. So the girl that he thinks he's flirting with says, oh, I'm so lonely. Send me a picture. And in the background of the picture is a map that shows where he is, right? And so immediately, like, drone comes and
yeah.
bombs that location.
Yeah.
And of course, it's like one Ukrainian guy who's just really good at flirting with Russian colonels on the
set. Good for him.
So apparently all of his friends in Ukraine are asking him for flirting advice.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're doing stuff like that. It's a lot of, from a libertarian perspective, I mean, it's warfare, which is not something we like.
Right.
But there's been a tremendous amount of market innovation in how this
yeah.
war is conducted, because it is not the case where the state, the government of Ukraine said, we've decided that drone technology is going to save us, now do this.
Right.
But rather just groups of people who were involved in the war in a very private
yeah.
capacity saying, using these things to hold off the Russians and then having success
yeah.
and then that getting incorporated into the government's response. It's a very bottom-up market-derived innovation for this
yeah.
war in the category of violence, which is
right.
not something we like, but it was not centrally planned.
Yeah. No, and we should disclose that a Ukrainian nonprofit like paid for your trip and like...
1,000%.
Yes.
I was there... at their invitation, they brought me, they paid for me. They're pro-Ukraine.
Okay.
They want Ukraine defended. They want America's support. This was their perspective. They were showing me why it is important for America to continue to support Ukraine. And for the record, if Russia wants to bring me over to see why it's important for them to invade Ukraine and pitch me on that, I would go.
They're going to push you out of a window.
Well, I would not go if my safety was not guaranteed, obviously. But I don't
consent. Your safety is not absolutely not
kidnapped
guaranteed.
By the Russians.
You
but,
should not go to Russia.
All right. Well, you know what I'm saying.
I understand.
Perfectly
yes.
happy to engage the other side, and have engaged the other side because, you know, how much money we give to Ukraine is
yes.
they could have the most just cause in the world,
right.
and it could still not necessarily be a good use of American taxpayer dollars.
Well, and it's the same issue with like our own defense spending, is that people just look at the dollar amount instead of like how it's being used.
Yeah.
You know, apparently it's now being more efficiently used by Ukraine for these $5,000 drones, which
yeah.
is nice. But yeah.
I used to say, like, you know, they should stop fighting because they can't win, and Russia just wants to defend the Russian supporting people
yeah.
on the Western side. And the fact is they already control the Western speaking, or the Western pro-Russian side.
Yeah.
So if that was all Russia wanted, the war could in fact be over.
Right.
But it's not,
because
they want to go further.
Right.
And
Ukraine doesn't want to surrender that stuff
no,
either.
They
so.
Don't. And they want Putin dead. They
yeah.
have, I think... there was an expectation I encountered. I mean, their hope is that Putin, the war goes super badly.
Yeah.
They're right now, they've claimed that they are taking a huge number of Russians off the field per month.
Mm-hmm.
It is the number we were cited over and over again was 30,000.
Ah, okay.
Which is a lot.
That is a lot.
And I'll be honest, I doubted it. Mm. Every time I heard it, I was like, there is no way that number is real. Mm. That's a huge number of casualties or people injured being removed from the field.
Right, right, right.
But I'm watching the drones hit them, and you get hit by a drone, you're not ouchies, I'm off the field now. You're fucking dead.
Yeah.
But also, because of the it's all being recorded by the drones. Uh-huh. So actually, they say they have more accurate numbers for how many people they're killing than ever before in human history.
I could see that.
So I'm like, okay, well, that's a huge number of people to take off the field. No country sustains that level of damage. You know, we lost like 500,000 people in the Civil War because it was American deaths on both sides.
Yeah, that was insane.
I think something like that in World War II.
And then like
that's over 4 years.
Right, and even in like Iraq, Afghanistan, it was only like 10,000.
Yes.
Yeah.
So, but Russia has so many people.
Yes.
And so their hope, the Ukrainian hope, is that Russia will have to start doing conscription and that'll be really unpopular and lead to the overthrow of the government. But the problem is that even if Putin were somehow overthrown, which I think is incredibly unlikely, there's no reason to think that he'd be overthrown by someone who wants to conquer Ukraine less.
Right. Yeah.
So that's the difficulty they're in, is that the leadership of Russia is very committed to this and will probably be committed to it no matter what.
Yeah, I have no idea how this war ends. It hurts my brain. And I also have no idea what happens when Putin dies.
I think the most likely result, and I met a lot of disagreement with this view, but it seems to me that the kill zone could just become the permanent border.
Just the DMZ.
And exactly.
Well,
and
without it's not that DMZ.
Anyone agreeing that the war is over, it will just reach a permanent standstill.
Is that technically what the Koreas have, actually? Is that they're still technically at war?
I think so. And maybe does someone still shoot at someone every now and then? Maybe yeah. I don't know.
Well, and the South Koreans even are conscripted, I think, for a year of military training, I think.
So I bet, if I had to guess, that seems to me where it's headed. But neither side views it that way. Russia's like, no, we're going to eventually win. They gain like an inch every year or something. And Ukraine's like, no, we will fight it until Russia is defeated and its government overthrown.
Yeah, no, I just feel like the end will because of like political or economic reasons, not because like World War I was not because of like actual military reasons that weren't.
Yeah. But in World War I, you didn't have intensely ideological reasons to keep fighting, right? They had inconvenient alliances, reasons of fighting, and that they could eventually be talked out of. The Russian project of you know, rebuilding the Russian Empire, the Soviet Empire, and Ukraine is part of that. And it's central to their goals.
Yeah.
And for Ukraine, it's about they want to get every inch of territory back, even if that's completely unreasonable. They want to punish Putin for what's been done. They don't want their government to sign any kind of agreement saying that let's say Vladimir Putin tomorrow was like, okay, war's over, but no further retribution for me. They'd put pressure on their government to vote against it.
Right.
Because they want Putin to suffer for this.
Right.
So,
I remember
it's not ending anytime soon.
Yeah.
Because the Russians are not going to win anytime soon, and the Ukrainians are not going to give up anytime soon.
And we should remember, like, this could be way worse. Like, I remember at the beginning of the war, everyone thought Putin was just going to roll through Ukraine and then go to Poland and just. Yep. There was very much, I heard, like, smart people in America argue that, like, we have to send in troops to stop him because otherwise he's going to be Hitler.
Yeah.
And very, like, to Ukraine's credit, with, you know, American support, it's been able to basically stop that in that tracks, right? Like, even if Putin did manage to take over, like win the war, take Kyiv, all that stuff, like he's got to like have learned his lesson and been like, okay, well, that's enough for now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, our soldiers, we should not send in troops. Absolutely not. That would not help.
No.
Our troops would just be in danger.
Right.
That would be like Russia's superior numbers aren't helping.
Mm-hmm.
It's the technology. And it's Starlink. It's Elon. Elon's technology is making this all work. So we'll see. But it was very interesting. I learned a lot. Had a great trip. Again, yes, full disclosure. It was.
How was the other stuff? How was the food?
Food was pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm not a super adventurous eater.
Okay.
So it's It's like meats with sauces and dumplings.
Were there pierogies or is that Polish?
That is Polish, but it's kind of pierogi type things, okay. Which I don't know who would dislike. I liked it just fine.
Yeah.
I did try borscht, which I've never had,
oh,
and I don't like.
Okay.
It's like beetroot soup.
Yeah.
It's a really appealing color.
Okay.
It looks like it would be really tasty.
What color? Is it brown?
It's like this bright red color, almost like a...
Like a tomato?
Yeah. Okay. Brighter, a pinker.
Okay, that doesn't seem appealing to me.
It looks like it would taste like raspberry or something, but it tastes like beets.
Yeah,
and it's not my favorite thing. But
were there any other like non-military parts? To, like, I don't know. Did you look at art or something? Or
looked at a lot of art museums that had been blown up by Russians. Yes, went to
an
art museum in Kharkiv.
Okay.
Which is a city much closer to the front lines.
Oh, now I know how to pronounce that. Thank you.
There you go.
Now I can be a douche when I pronounce it like that.
The Russians had hit recently and devastated. It caught fire and they smuggled out as many paintings as they possibly could.
Okay.
But yeah.
But no nightclubs.
This was not a
nightclub.
Go off on your own.
No. But those still exist, I think.
I mean, we had a... Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
In Kyiv, they do.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
In Kharkiv, there's a, like how I say that? There's a curfew in effect.
I see.
And we traveled, when we went further into the country, yeah. We traveled with a full security detail.
Did you talk to Ukrainian normies?
Yeah, a little bit.
Why stay in Kharkiv, right? I know it's
not
your homeland,
does.
Right?
Okay. Not everybody yeah. does. Some people leave, go elsewhere in Ukraine.
Yeah.
Some people left the country. Some people are like, yeah, it is their home, and they
yeah.
have... elderly relatives who need help, and it's the same.
Right, they can't move. Yeah.
It's the same yeah. about everyone else. Say, yeah. why do you live in this area where this area is safer? Or there's more economic
right.
possibility. And like, well, because we don't want to leave.
Yeah.
So
that's fair.
And they feel like if they all leave, then they're just giving it over.
Yeah, I do remember at the beginning of the war there was a big influx of refugees from Ukraine to mm-hmm. America, which
yeah,
I guess the Biden
people have left
more open
for
to
sure.
that. But
some
now that
left.
I don't feel like that's really a thing anymore.
Yeah,
I
some
mean,
people
I
left,
guess...
but some people leave, go back.
Yeah,
et cetera. Mm. I think that's about all I have to say on that.
Great.
It was a little bit of a last thing I'll say, and I've said this on a couple other shows. We did meet with some Ukrainian children who had been in the occupied zones and had been taken to Russia to be educated.
Oh, okay.
And it was very Fire Nation. It was very like they're being brainwashed to hate
Ooh.
Not Ukraine, but America. And I think people need to hear that Russia is telling the kids that one day they will be called up to service to fight America. And
that's so fun.
So if you believe that Putin's little, I know I'm America's friend, and this is just about me persecuting or going after Nazis or something,
uh-huh.
okay, but they're telling the children that the true enemy is America. And
cool.
Yeah, so let's
think
through that one.
They can team up with Iran. That'll be fun.
And they're already teamed up with the true enemy, which is China.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Satan.
Oh, okay. And Satan.
Okay.
Well, you're doing a good job of being Christian. Christian would say Satan is the true enemy, but Xi Jinping is his representative on this planet. So.
Yeah, okay.
So that's Ukraine. I also, on the trip there, I've watched a lot of great stuff. So
oh,
I had
about
8,000 hours
for this part.
To watch TV
it's
and
1
movies.
1 o'clock somewhere.
Where to begin?
Okay.
Yeah, go for it. Where to begin? I saw one battle after another finally.
Oh, okay.
Did not like it.
Okay.
Thought it was very bad. Don't understand why it won.
It seemed
awards.
Annoying. I did not see it.
I didn't like any of the characters. It's about left-wing radicals. And it's fine for a movie to be about characters I don't identify with or like.
It's not trying to make them likable, is it?
It wasn't trying to make them unlikable. It wasn't like a savvy, like White Lotus-esque satire of them.
Yeah.
They were the protagonists, and I wanted them to be arrested. I don't know. I mean, some of the people going after them were white supremacists, so
no,
I didn't identify with them either.
Okay.
But
yeah, no, I definitely know the feeling of like watching the show, and I'm like, you're trying to make this likable, but I kind of hope this person gets arrested or dies or whatever.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, they do like one of them like shoots and murders a security guard, and then
that's bad.
Right, that's bad. And she gets arrested, and then rats out the rest of them. And
that's also bad.
But she's supposed to be likable. I don't did not like her. Didn't love the movie. So
okay,
that one was no good. I watched Begonia.
Oh,
with
Emma
Stone. Yeah, which I liked it better. It has a twist ending, so I won't go into too much detail. I already knew the twist, and so okay. I didn't like the movie that much. I think if you didn't know the twist, you might like it more.
But what's the premise of the movie? I don't
know. That she's a tech CEO, and she's kidnapped by conspiracy theorists who think she's an alien, and they're trying to make her admit that she's an alien. They're like Alex Jones type people who think she's come to destroy Earth, and they're trying to get her to admit that, and she's she's a tech CEO, and so that's the premise.
Okay. I got a new alien theory, but maybe we can do that later. We can keep it.
Well, this is kind of an alien one. The thing I watched that I really liked was Pluribus.
Okay, I want to hear about
this. Which I had never seen. This is Vince Gilligan, the Breaking Bad creator's newer show with the woman who plays Kim Wexler in Better Call Saul, who's just a fantastic actress. And Vince Gilligan is fantastic. And the show is so good.
The premise is there's a hive mind, but Kim is
yes, there is a hive mind takes over. Or it's not actually an alien invasion, but it's a signal that originates from somewhere in deep space that is a code for creating like a virus or something. And so it's a little bit gain of function-y. Basically, our scientists accidentally, inadvertently, it's a lab leak too. They inadvertently. create and then release a virus that rewires your genetic code to be part of this collective mind that spreads to the whole population immediately.
I find that extremely implausible, but I guess if you can suspend that, then it's interesting, which is, it's fine.
But it has an incredibly small failure rate that there's a very, very small number of people on Earth who are just immune to it, including the main character. So everyone
she's
on
not
Earth,
the only one, but
no,
there's,
but
it's
there's
very
like
rare.
10 people,
okay,
globally. But so everyone else is suddenly the same person.
Suddenly, wake up! It's not like a.
It spreads real fast.
Okay,
because it can't be stopped unless you're just totally immune to it.
Unless you're in a basement.
They get everybody. Well, as soon as it has a plan, like as soon as you're part of the collective has a plan to spread it. So then. The more people you subsume it, it's like a von Neumann machine or something. Like it's reproducing.
But it's not trying to kill everyone.
No, it's trying to make everyone part of the collective.
I see.
And then it can't force her. It has the collective has a code of ethics.
Oh.
Like it can't harm.
Oh, so it's like a robot code.
Yeah, it won't harm any living thing. They won't even eat plants. They won't harm any living thing.
Do the humans still in the collective still need to live, right?
Yes.
So how do they?
Yeah, that becomes an issue later in the show.
Oh, okay.
So they won't. So Carol, the main character, they will take. Not only will they do nothing to harm her, they will grant her anything she wants.
That's interesting. Part of the way to try to convince her, or
maybe,
is just their ethics? Okay.
Maybe as part of their ethics, they want her to. When they figure out a way to make her part of the collective, they want her to voluntarily agree to become part of it. That's their motivation. So they're almost like buttering her up. And they do all these little tricks to make them seem more appealing. But it's just there's so much of the show in the early episodes is just her going around and being really freaked out and trying to counter this. So she is a great character because she is against this and she wants to undo it. And she thinks this is wrong and bad and needs to be stopped
and
in the same way we libertarians would.
She wants to save the world.
And nobody else sees it that way. The other 10 people are all like, no, oh my God, this is so great, right? And she's like, are you insane?
The other 10, because they can just do whatever they want, get whatever they want?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. Yeah, that's pretty selfish.
Yeah.
But
also like anyone, because the collective has the sort of memories and knowledge of every person on Earth who's a part of it. So like
when she knows all the hot gossip.
So when she says, I want to go meet one of the other 10 people. And they say, okay. And then they bring her a plane. The person flying it could be anyone on Earth because the collective has the knowledge of every pilot on Earth. It could be a 2-year-old.
Wow.
Right. Isn't that kind of weird?
I don't trust my son to fly a plane.
Isn't that kind of weird?
Yeah. That's interesting.
So yeah, at first she's like, why is there a woman in a a convenience store polo flying the plane in the local. Anyone can fly the plane.
So
it's so it's a high concept, very interesting.
Other
show.
Than the first episode where this all goes down.
Yeah.
What is like the episode by episode development? Like what?
It's her figuring out how to cope with this situation,
okay.
understand the situation, and try to undo it.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. Very good show. Couldn't recommend more. Okay. I was hooked. I was like, wow, this is great. I only got to see the first five episodes on the plane. And then my flight back was a different carrier that didn't have this show. So when I got home, the first thing I did was purchase Apple TV.
I like that.
The one subscription series I didn't have.
They're doing well
now
lately.
I have to have it for this show.
There was definitely a time when Apple TV was like,
didn't
well, other
it.
Than Ted Lasso, what do you need?
Didn't need it. Now I
Now
need
there's
it.
Lots of stuff that's pretty good on Apple TV.
Yeah.
I have been watching. Watch? Have you seen For All Mankind? That's not what I want to talk about, but have you seen
it's
it?
It's a space show.
It's a space show.
I haven't seen it.
It's an alternative
history.
As if
the Russians win the space race, right?
The Russians, well, they get to the moon first, and then the space race kind of continues in perpetuity. And every season, like, jumps forward 10 years of blah, 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 blah. But that show's really more focused on, like, the American side of things. There's a spinoff now called Star City that's, like, just the Soviet side.
Hmm.
And it's, like, starts in the 60s when, like, right after the Russians first go on the moon. And it's so much better than the original show.
Really?
The original
in
show...
Soviet Russia, in Soviet Russia, moon lands on you! Yeah.
So the original show, like, pretty poor acting, like, pretty... Like, the plot developments are a little too convenient. Like, I watched it anyway, but it was hard for me to, like, really recommend it. But, like, Star City, like, I think because it's in Soviet Russia, it turns into, like, a spy thriller. And it's just so much better.
Yeah.
And the acting is so much better. The directing is so much better. Like, it feels more like Chernobyl-level quality rather than For All Mankind, which I thought was kind of like made-for-TV movie quality.
It's on Apple TV?
It's on Apple TV.
Oh, maybe I'll watch it now that I'm forced to own this.
And you don't really need to have, like, seen the original show to enjoy Star City, I don't think, because it's like you're getting characters
There's
that had
different characters.
Yeah, that you didn't really see in the original show. So I'm very intrigued by it. Really been enjoying it. Recommend it for my my space people, my spy thriller people.
Well, let's move on to the show we did want to discuss.
We're ready.
House of the Dragon.
House of the Dragon.
So viewers know most of us at Reason are big Game of Thrones extended universe fans. You know, when an episode would air, we would all come in. You'd don't show up to work if you hadn't seen it.
Uh-huh.
Of course, we all have our grievances with how Game of Thrones ended. That Christian and I have litigated here a number of times.
Uh-huh.
House of the Dragon is one of the successor shows
yes.
that started out, I think, real strong. The first season was very good. It's a difficult material to adapt
okay.
because the source material for Game of Thrones is Game of Thrones books.
Right.
They're actually books. They're narratives. The source material for House of the Dragon is basically a history textbook of
so
this period of warfare.
There's not like quotes or people talking back and forth.
It's not designed for you to have like characters that have arcs and chain, you know, the way
yeah.
Arya Stark has an arc over the course of Game of Thrones. Daenerys Targaryen has an arc over the course of Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Where they start in one place, they encounter difficulty, they end in another place. House of the Dragon and what it's based on is a history of a period of warfare.
Yeah.
Which is difficult to adapt, especially because the source material has a lot of The perspective is from the historians telling the story, and sometimes they disagree on what actually happened, which is hard to portray. The first season did a really good job of showing some ambiguity in how things happened. The second season really dragged. It was very slow, too slow moving, very grim, and we were ready. You know, we were delaying this big, big battle that I knew was coming, the sea battle, the Battle of the Gullet. So this season, bam!
Boom. Start with the gullet.
Starts off with this battle. I think it's interesting to note that George R. R. Martin, the creator of Game of Thrones, is furious with Ryan Condal, the House of the Dragon showrunner.
Yep.
They're not on speaking terms anymore because Condal changed too many things. And George
and originally
R. R. Martin
George backed him, right,
that.
Or something
yes.
like that.
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
George R. R. Martin hates when they change things. They did change. They're changing things.
Yeah.
So spoilers if you haven't seen it yet. But the big change was this new dragon sheep stealer one of the little Valarian girls who didn't have her own dragon. She gets that dragon in the book in the source material. That dragon is ridden by this character who I think is not going to exist, called mm-hmm. Nettles, mm-hmm. who finds a dragon, rides the dragon, and actually has kind of an affair with Damon, or it might be Damon's daughter. Oh, okay,
I thought you were
going to
say with the dragon, and that was going to be very confusing.
Well, who knows? Maybe they'll go that route.
I don't know.
But so this whole kind of like, there was interference from this other dragon yeah. that's on their side but didn't know what ships to burn was totally made up, and okay. I don't know how people are going to react to that.
Yeah.
But it was a pretty cool battle.
It was a pretty cool battle. I got a game for you.
Okay.
I have a list
okay.
of dragon names from the show.
Okay.
Scale of 1 to 10, I want you to rank the names.
Okay. Got it.
All right. Vhagar. Ready.
Greatest name ever. That's 10.
That's 10.
Vhagar is such a good dragon
also
name.
A 10 from me.
Yeah.
Cyrax.
Cyrax is, I give it a 7.
Okay. I was low on Cyrax. I gave it a 4.
That is Rhaenyra's dragon.
Yes. Caraxes.
Another great name. I'm going to give that one an 8.
I gave it a 10. I probably gave out too many 10s.
That is Daemon's dragon.
Okay. Now we're getting into the template of like, here's a thing and another thing, and we're just going to stick them two together. Sunfire.
Sunfire is a 5, too basic.
Yeah, I gave it a 6, but yeah, like basically it's the best I think of that genre because mm-hmm. it's sun and fire, whatever.
It's Aegon's dragon.
Yeah. Vermithor.
Vermithor is another, that's a pretty good one, 10. I yeah. give that one a 10.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Silverwing.
3.
Yeah, I had 5. Sea Smoke.
It's funny to have dragons named like Sea Smoke next to Vhagar.
Yeah, okay.
I'm going to give it a 5.
Wow, okay. I went 9 on that one.
Okay.
Vermax.
There's too many similar ones.
Yeah, there's lots of axes.
6.
Yeah, I went 8. But pretty close. Sheepstealer.
I actually love Sheepstealer.
No!
10. I love Sheepstealer.
It's a scale of 1 to 10, and I said 0.
Oh, you don't like that
Ridiculous.
One. Ridiculous. I think it's cute. I like when literal. It spit up the sheep at her. Was
yeah,
like, here,
it's
have a
very
sheep.
Cat-like, to be fair.
Yeah.
But yeah, too literal. Dreamfire.
1.
1.
I like that one.
Yeah, I said 4. Last one. Maelise. Did I say that right?
Yeah, Maelise.
Uh-huh.
5.
Yeah, I said 7. Okay, here we go.
Well,
here you go, Cody. You can put that on the screen. It's a great graphic. Graphic design is my passion.
My absolute favorite dragon, you got a brief glimpse at it in that episode, is Tessarion, which is a beautiful blue dragon that is ridden by Daeron, who is a kid who was just introduced.
Okay.
He is he's the brother, younger brother of our bad guys, King Aegon and mm-hmm. Aemond, the one-eyed bad guy. They have another younger brother named Daeron, who's with the army, and that he was in the background. I think.
Yeah.
Brown-haired kid.
The
actually, that kid is gonna play Link in the Legend of Zelda movie, which is good casting.
Yeah,
I think so. Good for him.
More
things to say about the dragon battle. If I have my one biggest complaint, at this point of Game of Thrones House of Dragon is. How powerful and invincible the dragons are varies so wildly based on artificial storyline needs.
Plot convenience, yeah.
From not just episode to episode,
right.
but like from moment to moment.
Yeah.
Like you have, going back to Game of Thrones, you have dragons seem... there's a million other crossbow things trying to shoot down when Daenerys attacks King's Landing. They mm-hmm. can't hit her. But then they also easily killed her other dragon. It's like there's no rules for it.
Yeah.
In the book, the rule is very clear. You can't kill them.
Yeah.
That's the rule.
No, it's...
Indestructible, can't be stopped. They can kill each other, but you can't... You have to make a... There's a character... If you make like a 1 in a million crossbow hit... Directly into the eye, they kill a dragon. Luckily,
that's like a piece of dust.
But it's supposed to be like it's a 1 in a million shot.
Yeah, I kind of prefer that. Maybe it's oversimplified, but to me, it reminds me of like World War II when we figured out that like aircraft carriers were the thing in the Pacific.
100%.
Right? The dragons are like the aircraft carriers. 100%. Like if you got those, like that's all that really matters.
100%. 100%.
Which is like really interesting for him. And obviously right after that, it was nukes, blah, blah, blah.
But here they're chucking grappling hooks at them and
right.
that kills
yeah.
them.
You can't take down a nuke with a grappling hook.
I believe
hook.
In the source material, Jace, who dies in this episode, so sad.
He seems pretty dead. Yeah.
Yeah. He's definitely dead.
R.I.P.
When he, in the source material, he is trying to rescue one of his younger brothers, I believe, uh-huh. who is on one of the ships, and he flies too close to the water.
Okay.
And gets taken out, yeah. and then shot. So it's a little different.
Yeah.
Then also, I didn't understand. It's so dark, and you yeah. can't see what's happening.
Okay, Suderman.
That's my complaint. Everything is too dark. Why is like where the ships were and why that ship was going to chase that ship and where it was in proximity to Dragonstone
yeah.
and High Tide and King's Landing seemed very not well thought
no,
out.
No, I
me,
know. But... I know a lot of people have the like, oh, HBO is too dark complaint. I'm not one of like I've had that experience maybe once or twice.
I can't see or hear anything.
Yeah. And I think you guys are going to have trouble driving at night when you go lower. I think that's it. It's just your eyes.
I put closed captions on because I can't understand what they're saying half the time.
Mm,
and I wish I could adjust the brightness so I could see what's happening.
Okay.
But anyway, I thought it was good-ish.
Yeah.
I would have done these couple things differently because like George R. R. Martin, I don't like when things are, for the most part, I don't like when things are different from the books. He has recognized a couple times when they have an improved idea that they okay. expand. For instance, in the source material, the sister who has dreams about the future.
Helena?
Helena.
Yeah,
doesn't
I love
have that aspect in the book. And,
she's
George
great. I love
said
her.
That was a great idea, yeah. and it gives depth to her character.
Mm-hmm.
The old king who died in the first season,
yeah.
their father, is a lot more, there's a lot more to him in the show because the actor did a okay. lot more with him.
Patty's George good. R. Martin Patty's
said,
very good.
Great.
Yeah.
So he's happy to recognize improvements.
Yeah.
But changes for the sake of change are usually
bad. I like what you said about, this was in The Office before the show, but you said in season two, in the book, Jace was like the leader. Tell us more about that
yes.
and then I have thoughts about it. Yeah.
Yes. So that, I think the character is kind of annoying in the show because he's just kind of...
Sorry, in the season finale of season two, he's got this scene where he's making this face and his wife comes up and says, it's not becoming of a prince to pout. And he's like, I'm not pouting. And it's like, bro, your lips are literally pouty lips
And
right
he's
now.
Mad about her recruiting other people to ride the dragons.
Could the Queen Rhaenyra, yeah.
Which could not be farther from the character in the book. In the book... Basically, Rhaenyra goes into mourning after the death of her the other son
yeah.
at the season one finale.
Cute kid.
And just, she doesn't do anything for this period of
She's
conflict.
Just in mourning,
Jace.
That would have been bad TV, to be fair.
That's why I'm saying the history doesn't make necessarily for good TV.
Yeah.
So Jace basically takes over the running of things.
Okay.
And he does a very effective job. It is his idea to recruit people. We need more dragons.
Okay.
He recruits people to fly the dragons.
Yeah.
So he is like very effectively governing on her behalf.
Yeah.
He's not at odds with her. She's just not in the picture.
Yeah.
She comes back after then he gets killed almost kind of inadvertently,
okay.
which is this massive blow to the black cause.
Yeah.
And then she goes into revenge mode after his death.
And that would have made his death, again, like in season two, if he's the effective leader, if he's like the great hope for the Team Black to succeed.
It's a little bit like Ned Stark getting killed, where you're like, what? He's the good one.
Right. If he then dies at the beginning of season three, you're like, oh, no, what are they going to do now? But now instead we're kind of like.
That was robbed of a little bit of stakes.
Oh,
so
Rhaenyra's
pouty.
Just going to, she's going to be sad, but now she's going to still be in charge.
Yeah.
It's one that's dragon, but...
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But there are some very interesting things to come from from the text that I'm looking forward to seeing happen that will likely be happening this season, probably in the middle of the season, that are that will make for good television. So
I gotta say, you know, I didn't watch the original show of Game of Thrones, but then
I forgot, you don't even...
I never
that's
watched the original.
So weird. You didn't work here.
Still
that would
haven't.
Have been unallowed.
Yeah, that's fair.
Disallowed? Unallowed?
I didn't work here. Like, you know, I think my wife was watching the last season when we first met. But, like, I didn't watch the original show. And then, like, when House of the Dragon started up, I was like, I'll watch it, sure, because I'm starting from the beginning. And it's been great.
Yeah.
I've enjoyed it. Like, yeah, season two was slow, like we said, but, like, the world building in season one, like, the political coalition building that they kind of had going on was very interesting. You didn't have that much in season two, but still, again, like not having watched the original show, like really enjoyed this. Enjoyed Night of the Seven Kingdoms, which we talked about a few months ago.
That was a good. That was just a solid show throughout.
So yeah,
that's funny. You've never felt the impulse to go back and watch Game of Thrones?
Yeah, I don't know.
It ended
especially
badly,
because I heard so many people.
Good.
Yeah,
it's pretty good through the first six seasons.
Right, I know I would enjoy the journey. Along
and it's
the
even,
way.
It's like it yeah. only becomes like. It makes you furious how bad it is only at like the very end, only in like the final two episodes. It's okay. Very salvageable until the final two episodes. So
okay.
I can tell you exactly where to stop watching.
I did see the penultimate episode because I was like with family and they were like, no, we're watching it. And I was like, okay.
It's bad.
And even then I was like, why did this happen? Like, how did this? And really I was bad. Like, this seems bad.
The ceiling falls on Jaime and Cersei. I'll never, ever forgive them for doing that. So stupid.
And just like the assassin girl comes out of nowhere, and I was like, "Really,
Arya? Yeah, yeah." And she doesn't really do anything.
No,
a lot of things. Bran does not once use his power to like see the past and the future and know what things are happening. Never once for any effect that matters whatsoever. Why give someone that power if they're never going to
what a
use
waste.
It in any narrative way?
What a waste!
What a waste! But yeah. All right. I think that's all
that's
I have
all
on
got.
My agenda.
You got so much on your list, man.
I think we got through it. We did a lot of TV, but we did a lot of news and
we did a
real
lot of news. We did
politics.
A lot of Ukraine. Yeah.
Jason, thanks for being here.
A pleasure.
See you guys next week.